help us in order to reach to our poor neighbor, poor friend, poor relatives, you know, and to help them in general? What are they?
Well, obviously, when we look at the Islamic teachings, we see there are different ways. For example, we have the discussion of zakat,
yes,
which is alms. We have the discussion of khums. The difference is that zakat has a condition that mm-hmm. when your wealth has reached to a specific level, mm-hmm. for example, if someone owns 20 kg of gold, then he has to pay zakat. If it's less than that, he has not.
Okay.
For example, if it is 200 kg of silver, if he has, for example, you know, the number of goats, if it reaches to a specific okay. amount. So there are 9 things basically for the zakat. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, on the savings, there is a portion which is known as 1/5. Mm-hmm. The annual saving that you have, I'm talking about not the annual income, annual saving.
Yes.
There we have a
whole... The extra
saving. Yes. The 1/5 of that is necessary to be distributed amongst the people.
Okay.
And we have the verses of
is
the
it Quran. Only the 1/5 homes or no? For example, it could be sometimes half, sometimes 1/10 or something like that.
Well, that goes to the zakat, ruba, ushr, or all those okay. things, the terminologies that we have.
Okay.
But for the homes, as far as it is concerned, to the homes, it is 1/5 mm-hmm. that they have to give, like, or the 20%.
Okay.
This is the same. 1/5 or 20% is the same.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, we have these things. And there is a set, like, there's a formula. Obviously, mm-hmm. we have to follow that. The main idea behind it, this is that because we are social animals, mm-hmm. Allah has created us to socialize. My individual life has effect on my social life.
That's right.
You know, when I'm talking, the way I talk, if I'm alone in home, it is not damaging anyone.
Yes.
But the same way of talking might have effect in the public.
That's right.
There might be some people following me. It has an effect. Similarly, my clothing. Mm-hmm. The way I, you know, deal with the people, the way I socialize. So all the things, they have effect. They have two types of effect. One individual, the other is social. Similarly, the income that we have, it has effect on my personal life and the society.
Okay.
There's a portion of society in my income. Mm-hmm. And the main idea behind this is that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has clearly said in the Quran, وَلِلَّهِ مُلْكُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ. Everything is for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. There might be some people who say, like, obviously I'm earning, so this is my money. No, this is for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allah owns everything. So when he has decided that from the portion that you're giving away, you need to give a specific portion from your earnings, from your savings. You need to separate a portion for the society. This is what Allah
That's
has
right.
said.
Okay.
On the other hand, we know that, you know, there are many narrations which says, like, you need to take care of your neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know about your 40 neighbors who are living around you.
Yeah.
If anyone has slept hungry and you have slept with the, you know,
full stomach,
yes. then you're answerable.
Yes.
So the rights of the people, the rights of the neighbors, the rights mm-hmm. of the society, the rights of animals who are living around us.
Yeah.
The trees, plants, obviously, yes. we have to water them. We have to take care of them. All these things are mentioned in the Quran.
That's right.
And it is mentioned in the Islam. One important thing is that there is a famous verse in the Quran that قَوْلٌ مَعْرُوفٌ خَيْرٌ مِّن صَدَقَةٍ يَتْبَعُهَا أَذًى, that a good speech is better than a charity that you give which teases people or which, you know, harms or insults people.
Yes.
The meaning is that, you know, sometimes we give charity, we give khums or zakat, but behind that, we talk too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have seen this many times.
Yes.
Sorry to the brothers and sisters who are listening to this. In the centers, Islamic centers, especially mm-hmm. in the West, when they give something, they tell everyone, mm-hmm. you know, I have donated this. I have given this.
Yes.
Maybe when they help someone, mm-hmm. their brother, sister, I don't know, there is an orphan, they tell everyone.
That's right.
And this teases them mm-hmm. that, okay, if he has helped us, what is the need of telling everyone?
That's right.
Or what is the need of keep telling me that I help you? You know, this is another
yes,
attitude
yes,
that
yes,
we
yes.
have in the society, that when we help someone, we keep telling him, informing him that, look, if today you are there, it's because of me.
Mm-hmm.
If you have this, it is because of me.
It's better to keep it a secret way.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you have done it, you have done it for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That's then right. Leave it for Allah. That's why Allah said that if you do not have, and if you say, sorry, I don't have, and you say it nicely, this qawlum ma'ruf, this good speech, this refusing someone nicely is better than giving someone and that's keep right. telling him.
Okay, that's all right. This is a good way. Okay, Shaykh Rouhani, nowadays, as you said, you know, the lifestyles are different from the past. That's why Sayyid Mohsen too, I believe that the people are not concerned about the affairs of their neighbors or, for example, friends or relatives. Every family is busy with its own, we can say, problems. That's why maybe we do not see, for example, the poverty of our neighbor. We can say wall to wall, very much close to us, isn't it?
Yes, of course. The problem is that even if you fulfill a very kind of modern, let's say, developed kind of economic system in the most developed countries, still you have homeless people.
Yeah.
You see, there are homeless people in Japan and the U.S. and Europe.
Yes, yes.
So still you have these kind of people. That's why in Islam, it tells us first that you have to have a just kind of economic system.
That's right.
But still, you may have these kind of poor people, as you mentioned, in your society. For this kind of people, to help them, we have nafaqa, we have infaq, we have sadaqat, we have different kind of charities like zakat, like khums. So, of course, these kind of things that or rulings that we have in Islam, it will help both the government and both the government and societies and the people
That's right.
to help the poor people. To let's say support them because even as I mentioned, even if you have the most modern system, the best economic system, then still we might have these kind of people.
That's right.
So that's why not only from the religious perspective, but also from the human perspective,
yes,
we have always these kind of problems that we should care about these poor kind of part of the societies.
That's right.
Because they will threaten the tharwa and the wealth of the rich.
That's right.
This is a very great threat. Mm-hmm. Against the rich people.
Yes.
So that's why the rich people must take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they do not believe in God, even if they do not believe in religion.
Yes.
Because whenever there's poverty, it will cause lots of social problems.
That's right.
Not only social problems, let's say moral problems, sometimes political problems. So that's why Islam very much emphasizes on these poor
That's right.
People to be helped, to be supported by the others.
And logically, when you take a look at the map of the world, the richest part of the world are the most poor one, the poorest one. For example, Africa, some of the countries in Asia, okay? Or whether they are under the sanctions or they are monopolized by this and that country. And they are the richest countries in the world in terms of natural resources. But unfortunately, they are the poorest. Look at Africa. What's happening over there, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it shows that, as you said, the superpower, these global powers, are after their own, as you said, economic not only to the countries, they would benefit, they also would not take care of the people of the other parts of the world. And this is the sad news that only maybe more than maybe 5 to 6%, maybe up to 10% of the whole people of the world are rich and 90% are living in a, we can say, a poor life. And if it was equally distributed, all the people could benefit from the natural resources. Because the creation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and these natural resources are producing and reproducing themselves on and on, okay?
Yeah.
And it is enough for all of them. But unfortunately, in today's world, and these powers are not taking care of the people. Sayyid Mohsen, anything missed?
One last thing is that in order to remove the poverty from the society, obviously the first thing, it is on the shoulders, the duty is on the shoulders of the government, number
yes.
one. And fortunately, we can see after the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini has started a campaign where he put the boxes.
Yes.
For
sadaqa boxing,
yes. like charity boxes.
Yes.
You know, today we see in the beginning of every street, the holy places, I don't know, the schools, everywhere, the workplace, we see that. And the way they manage to control the street beggars, you know, it is something which we can obviously tell everyone or it can become a role model
That's
for
right.
everyone. That in this country, the government has done its duty. The other portion is related to the people's life.
That's right.
Obviously, when the government is doing something, we need to support the government as well.
Yeah.
There are many things. There might be many flaws, yes, obviously, in applying or,
yes, or
doing
managing
something. You're managing, yes, or practically practicing something. But on the other hand, we as a public must support,
yes,
our governments. If even the governments are not doing anything, then we need to do by ourselves. And we can do that. At least in the homes, we see that it is said, like, if you know someone who is poor,
mm-hmm,
you know, around you, yeah, obviously, these are the ones which we can help them.
Yes.
And we should do that. If every one of us can see in our life, like if we can start working in our own society and not looking on the other side, we can, inshallah,
right, inshallah,
cope with this
problem.
Issue.
We hope that by the reappearance of Imam As, the social justice, economic justice is everywhere around the world, and all the people having a prosperous, good life, inshallah, without poverty. Thank you very much, Sayyid Mohsen and Sheikh Rouhani, for your presence in the program Viewpoints. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Viewpoints. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanullah.
Thank you so much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. You can log on to our website at parstoday.com, and you can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until next time, goodbye. A symphony of nature. Oh, it's taking my breath away. I'm so blessed out here today.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Welcome to our program, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be asking a question. This question is a historical question. It's related to an event that might have taken place in the era in which Imam Ali officially was the caliph of the Islamic Empire. That question is regarding a person named Mahoviyeh, who is an Iranian from the city of Marv, a city in Iran. And the question is this. According to some reports, it's been stated that this person, who was non-Muslim, Imam Ali appointed him as the person to collect the taxes from the city of Marv. Right. So the question here is that how is this possible? Why would Imam Ali do this, make a non-Muslim, you know, a one of the administrators of his government. Before we begin analyzing this, the answer to this question, we must say this. This person, Muawiyah, he was very instrumental in the murder of the person, the king Yazdegerd the third, the last shah of the Sassanid Empire. And he's historically a very significant person. Of course, that's not related to the answer to our question particularly. According to some historical accounts, this person, Muawiyah, was the watchman, one of the guards of the city of Marv after the Battle of Jamal, the famous Battle of Jamal. He came to Imam Ali alayhi salam. He came on behalf of the inhabitants of Marv, and he asked Imam Ali, he requested to make peace with Imam Ali, make a peace treaty with him and a pact with him. Imam Ali, after this meeting with this person, he wrote a letter addressing the farmers, the captains of the armies, and the other inhabitants and groups of people living in the city of Marv. And in this letter, he said the following. This person, Muawiyah, has come to me, and I have chosen him as my representative. Right? Of course, in continuation in this historical account, it's been mentioned that the inhabitants of Marv, after a while, they became non-Muslims. They became kafir. They became disbelievers. This historical account also explicitly states that Ali gave the responsibility of collecting the taxes of the city of Marv in the hands of this person, Muawiyah. Right. So this historical account, it affirms this, that this actually took place. Now, regarding whether this person was a disbeliever or not, God willing, we will examine this in some of our forthcoming sessions. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
In the limelight.
The U.S. Supreme Court has allowed a congressional committee to receive copies of Donald Trump's tax returns, ending a 3-year battle by the Democratic-led body to see the documents the former president has refused to release. We take a look at the U.S. press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Reuters news agency has covered this story. The U.S. Supreme Court on Tuesday, 22nd of November, cleared the release of Donald Trump's tax returns to a House of Representatives committee, handing a defeat to the Republican former president who had called the Democratic-led panel's request politically motivated. The justices denied Donald Trump's 31st of October emergency application to block a lower court's ruling that upheld the Ways and Means Committee's request for his tax records as a justified part of the panel's legislative work. No justice publicly dissented from the decision. The committee, which has sought 6 years of Donald Trump's tax records spanning from 2015 to 2020, will have little time to complete its work related to the returns before a Republican takeover of the House of Representatives. Republicans secured a narrow majority following the 8th of November midterm elections and take control of the House and the committee in January. The fight over his tax returns is one of the many legal woes for Donald Trump as he moves forward with another run for the presidency in 2024. Trump last week announced the launch of his candidacy. Ways and Means Chairman Richard Neal said the Supreme Court's action upholds the principle of congressional oversight. This rises above politics, and the committee will now conduct the oversight that we've sought for the last 3.5 years, Richard Neal said in a statement. A Trump spokesperson did not immediately reply to a request for comment. Donald Trump was the first president in 4 decades not to release his tax returns, as he sought to keep secret the details of his wealth and the activities of his real estate company, the Trump Organization. The Ways and Means Committee had told the Supreme Court in a legal filing that siding with Donald Trump would harm the constitutional authority of a co-equal branch of the U.S. government by in effect preventing Congress from completing any investigation involving a former president whenever there are allegations that the investigation was politically motivated. The House panel, in its request, invoked a federal law that empowers its chairman to request any person's tax returns from the Inland Revenue Service, the IRS. House Democrats have said they need to see Donald Trump's tax returns to assess whether the Inland Revenue Service, the IRS, is properly auditing presidential returns and to gauge whether new legislation is needed. Donald Trump's lawyers have said the committee's real aim was to publicly expose his tax returns and unearth politically damaging information about Donald Trump. NBC News has also covered the same story and gives us more detail. The Supreme Court on Tuesday, 22nd of November, rejected former President Donald Trump's last-ditch plea to block the release of his tax records to House Democrats, paving the way for the possible disclosure to the lawmakers. The decision by the Supreme Court in a brief order, noting no dissenting votes, means the committee can try to access the documents before Republicans take over the House of Representatives in January. The committee, however, has not said how quickly it expects to get the documents. Upon taking control, Republicans are expected to withdraw the request. Earlier this month, Chief Justice John Roberts temporarily blocked the Ways and Means panel from accessing Donald Trump's tax records while the court decided how to act on Trump's request. Donald Trump, who, unlike other recent presidents, refused to make his tax returns public amid scrutiny of his business affairs, turned to the justices after an appeals court in Washington refused to intervene. The court has recently rejected similar requests from Donald Trump. The former president's lawyers contested the House Ways and Means Committee's assertion that it needed the information to probe how the Inland Revenue Service, the IRS, conducts the auditing process for presidents, saying it did not stand up to scrutiny. House Democrats, as well as Biden administration, urged the court to reject Donald Trump's request, saying their demand for the tax documents reflected a valid legislative purpose. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit declined last month to reconsider a 3-judge panel's ruling in August that the Ways and Means Committee could obtain the tax returns. Tax returns are confidential under federal law, but there are some exceptions, one of which allows the chairman of the committee to request them. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi A Democrat from California praised the Supreme Court's common sense decision, which she said upholds our democracy, the rule of law, and the Congress's ability to execute its legislative and oversight responsibilities. Nancy Pelosi added, "These documents are vital to meeting the House's constitutional mandate, guarding the public interest, defending our national security, and holding our public officials to account." The House looks forward to promptly receiving the reviewing these documents, Nancy Pelosi said in a statement, calling on Congress to enact legislation requiring presidents and candidates for president to disclose their tax returns.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, power and its manifestations. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. Among man's innate desires, mention can be made of the desire to wield power, the desire of power, to attain power, to be capable of performing deeds, and to have control over other beings. This desire also emerges in childhood and endures to the end of a person's life. Of course, this desire has degrees depending on the age differences, period of life, and external factors. A healthy infant's motions and movements of hands and feet and the untiring gambling of children are indications of this innate desire. It's a desire that most human beings do have from the very first day they step into this world. So by and by, range of man's quest for power increases, extending to infinity. The more he grows up or she grows up, that particular feeling of power, the wield of power, increases in them. At first, performing various deeds, establishing power and extending strength, occur by means of stimulating nerves and by muscles, with the aid of natural powers alone. So these constant movements made by the child on instinct help increase his physical power. And as time goes by, his muscles become stronger and more ready to perform greater and more laborious functions. This goes on until he reaches the peak of youth and the climax of physical power. From then on, he faces the period of stagnation and inertia. Then comes the period of senility and old age. Gradually, the physical powers are exhausted, but the zest for power never dies down in the man. Power and manifestations is something that grows with the man from the younger age to when he is old. How can we control this?
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha
illallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. We are talking about power and its manifestations. To extend the domain of his power, man does not suffice with natural powers. By the help of sciences and industries, man endeavors to find better services. He endeavors to find better devices to conquer the world and subjugate the universe. Like to take over the universe. It goes without saying that scientific discoveries and inventions, especially in recent times have greatly contributed to the satisfaction of this inborn desire, and will later do so as well. Man does not even refrain from using the power of his fellow creatures, in as far as conditions and facilities can permit him. Man uses others for his own benefit, effort to reach social positions, and to be honored nationally. As well as the nation's demand for superiority at the international level. And all these are manifestations of this desire, which at times appear in a correct and sound form, while at other times it appears in the form of aggressions on the rights of others in various shapes of oppressive colonization and exploitation. So the quest for increased power does not stop at this level. Rather, it even embraces impeccable and metaphysical powers as well. Various branches of exotic sciences, like spiritism and different forms of sensual mathematics, are all indicative of man's wondrous efforts to develop his ability. Power is something that is an inbuilt feeling in a human being, and it has so many manifestations that, if not controlled very well, can lead to his demise. Thank you so much for listening to this show. Until next episode, inshallah, fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
What about you? IRIB English Radio. To our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Democracy is under threat in the U.S. Even the midterm elections could leave democracy weaker ahead of the 2024 presidential race. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media websites for further details. Stay tuned, please. The website of Common Dreams wrote, "The Guardian reported this week on the efforts of tech billionaire Peter Thiel to influence U.S. politics. It's an important piece about more than just this election cycle. Thiel's power shows that Citizens United has done to U.S. democracy. With 3 weeks to go until Election Day, outside groups have already spent some $1.3 billion to influence the outcome of the midterms. Till's nearly $30 million in donations account for only a fraction of that nearly unbelievable total, but he represents a very specific kind of influencer. As Kristen Lee told The Guardian, since Citizens United, just 12 mega donors, 8 of them billionaires, have paid $1 out of every 13 spent in federal elections. Billionaires are sponsoring candidates like prized racehorses. The situation is worrying, exceedingly worrying, but not unprecedented. During the Gilded Age, moneyed corporate interest held incredible sway over the U.S. government. Senators who represented the copper-rich state of Montana, for example, were referred to as representing copper rather than representing their constituents or the state itself. Copper magnate William A. Clark bought himself a seat in the Senate by plying the state's legislators, who at the time elected U.S. senators with massive financial gifts. Once Clark's corrupt practices were revealed, his 1889 opponent, also revealingly a copper magnate, worked to have him removed from Congress. Clark came back in 1901, defeating, you guessed it, another wealthy mine owner to win a Senate seat. The citizens of Montana finally took their government back in 1912, enacting a law that barred corporations from intervening financially in elections. That law stood for a century, until the Supreme Court struck it down and, inconsistent with Citizens United, decided in 2010. Shortly after the Citizens United ruling, President Obama asked Americans to imagine the power this will give a special interest over politicians. We don't have to imagine anymore, we are living it. Till is a particularly alarming example. Through massive donations to super PACs, which Citizens United brought to the fore, he's using his riches to force his fringe views into mainstream political discourse. He's supporting candidates who spread the false claim that fraud decided the 2020 election. And his money doesn't just force a certain type of candidate into the public eye. It also silences Till's ideological opponents. By working to defeat the 10 Republicans who voted to impeach Donald Trump, for example, Till has deterred others from speaking out against the former president. Few politicians can afford to ignore Till and the threat his money holds. We don't have to continue down this road. Many groups, including Brennan Center, have proposed legislation to limit billionaires' influence over elections without running afoul of Citizens United. We don't need a billionaire's approval like the people of Montana did in 1912. Americans can exercise the power they have as citizens and take back the U.S. government. Also, Guardian wrote, Peter Till is far from the first billionaire who has wielded his fortune to try to influence the course of American politics. But in an election year when democracy itself is set to be on the ballot, he stands out for assailing a long-standing governing system that he has described as deranged and in urgent need of course correction. The German-born investor and tech entrepreneur, a Silicon Valley disruptor who helped found PayPal alongside Elon Musk and made his fortune as one of the earliest investors in Facebook, has catapulted himself into the top ranks of mega donor class by pouring close to $30 million this year's midterm elections. He's not merely favoring one party over another by supporting candidates who deny the legitimacy of Joe Biden's election as president and have, in their different ways, called for the pillars of the American establishment to be toppled entirely. Thiel's priorities this midterm cycle have partly aligned with those of Donald Trump, with whom he has had an on-again, off-again relationship since writing him a $1.25 million check during the 2016 presidential campaign. Thiel, like Trump, has made it his business to end the careers of what he calls the traitorous 10 Republican House members who voted to impeach Trump in the wake of the January 6th insurrection. Four of these members opted not to run for re-election at all, and four more, including Liz Cheney, the vice chair of the House committee investigating January 6th, went down in the primaries. But there are also signs that Thiel is thinking around and beyond the former president. The lion's share of his largesse, $28 million and counting, has been directed towards two business protege who, with his help, have established themselves as Gapley right-wing darlings. J.D. Vance, the best-selling author of the blue-collar memoir, Hillbilly Elegy, who is running for Senate in Ohio, and Blake Masters, a self-styled anti-progressive and anti-globalist who is running for Senate in Arizona. Over the past decade, ever since the Supreme Court dramatically loosened the rules of political campaign, giving in its Citizens United decision, Thiel has placed sizable fortunes on candidates who are not only conservative but have sought to challenge long-standing institutional traditions and break the Republican Party's own norms. Senator Ted Cruz in Texas and Senator Josh Hawley in Missouri, as well as Trump himself. Masters, who has campaigned on the notion that psychopaths are running the country right now and is spoken approvingly of the anti-establishment philosophy of 1990s, Ona Bomber, and Vance, a frequent speaker on the university circuit during his book tour days, who now says universities are the enemy, fit the same mold. They and Thiel all have ties to a branch of the new right known as NatCon, whose adherents believe broadly that the establishment needs to be torn down, much as Thiel and his fellow Silicon Valley disruptors believed 2 decades ago that the future lay in destroying long-standing business models and practices. Thiel himself opined as far back as 2009 that he no longer believed democracy to be compatible with freedom and expressed little hope that voting will make things better. While a member of Trump's presidential transition team in 2016, he flashed his institution-busting instincts by proposing that a leading climate change skeptic, William Happer, be appointed as White House science advisor. He also pushed for a libertarian Bitcoin entrepreneur who did not believe in drug trials to head up the Food and Drug Administration. Such proposals were too much even by Trump's iconoclastic standards. Steve Bannon, Trump's ultra-right campaign manager and political strategist, told a Thiel biographer, "Peter's idea of disrupting government is out there." Thiel did not respond to a request for an interview, and these representatives did not respond to multiple invitations to comment. Masters and Vance also did not respond to inquiries. Chi-Sun Lee, an expert on campaign finance who directs the Brennan Center's elections and government program at New York University, said, "It does seem to be getting worse. Outside spending in this federal midterm cycle is more than double the last midterm cycle. Since Citizens United, just 12 mega donors, 8 of them billionaires, have paid $1 out of every 13 spent in federal elections. And now we are seeing a troubling new trend that some mega donors are sponsoring campaigns that attack the fundamentals of democracy itself. Till's spending has been dwarfed this year by at least three other mega donors: Soros, $128 million to the Democrats; shipping products tycoon Richard Olhain, $53 million to Republicans; and hedge fund manager Kenneth Griffin, $50 million to Republicans. And Till has some way to go to match the consistent giving cycle after cycle of the Koch brothers, or Sheldon Adelson, the late Las Vegas casino magnate. Many experts also believe the attack on democracy began long before it became as explicit as Till has made it, because the whole point of funneling large amounts of money into the political system is to sway policy away from the will of the majority to the narrow interests of the donors and their friends. This ability to control the policy agenda drives spending even more than the desire to see specific candidates win, says Harvard law professor Lawrence Lessig, whose 2011 book Republic Lost offers an enduringly devastating analysis of the relationship between money and political influence. And the spending is likely only to increase. You're going to see much, much bigger individual contributions and an acceleration of contributions to super PACs, like the ones established to support Vance and Masters, Lessig said, adding, "The candidates and the super PACs can't coordinate on spending, but that doesn't mean they can't coordinate on the fundraising. Since the super PACs are outspending candidates by orders of magnitude, it's all a dance to flush money into super PACs. They basically call the shots, and politicians can get anything through that they oppose." Less than a month from the election day, both Vance and Masters are trailing their Democratic opponents in the polls, Vance by less than Masters, but Lessig says it would be wrong to conclude Till or any of the other mega donors are wasting their money. If you're a candidate and you know $10 million is going to come in against you on a particular issue, you are going to bend to avoid the effect of that money, whether or not it's going to decide the race. If you're someone who would otherwise be a strong climate activist, but you know that if you mention a carbon tax, $1 million will drop from some anti-carbon tax super PAC, you won't talk about it, he said. Till's bid to overthrow the system, in other words, goes well beyond his ability to determine which party controls the Senate next year. The money will solidify the notion that the country is being run by psychopaths, at least among a hardcore of Republican voters, analysts warn, and will further harden the ideological battle lines that have split the country in two and made common ground ever harder to find. It also brings the extreme opinions of Nat Confeder into the mainstream, making it easier for radical Republican candidates to run and win in future races, they say. We are at a crisis point here. Not so much because the ideas are hard to defeat, but we don't have a context in which to defeat them, Lessig said, adding, The fact that the same number of people believed the election was stolen as believed it on January 6 is a profound indictment of the information ecology in America. The Brennan Center believes there are ways of improving the system, at least at the state and local level, and points to efforts in both red and blue states to close certain loopholes and introduce public financing models to rein in the influence of the mega donors. Lee said she would also like to see federal legislation to build a meaningful firewall between campaign funds and super PACs. She said, "The legislation exists, and it would be a constitutional improvement even under the Citizens United ruling. All we need is the political will to act."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Current world order will be replaced by a new order where US is isolated, Asia powerful, resistance front expanded. This is the part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with students on Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. This meeting was held on the occasion of National Students' Day and National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance, which are commemorated on the 13th of Aban, 4th of November. The Americans, their intention was not to leave Iraq. They then tried to appoint their own agents, but they failed completely. They failed in Iraq, they failed in Syria, and they failed in Lebanon. The recent agreement between Lebanon and the usurping regime, Israel, regarding the issue of maritime gas-filled borders and the like was a part of America's failure. This is because the Americans started ordering things. It must be done this way and that way. Hezbollah rejected all this. This is America's failure. It is obvious that their calculations are inaccurate. One of the things that, I'm saying this now, some other people across the world have apparently said it too, I believe that one of the signs of America's decline is the election of people, like the current and the former presidents.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Country of 300 million plus people almost destroys itself and elects a president in the previous term, somebody like Trump, whom the world considers to be crazy, and after he was defeated, a man like this current one comes to power. And well, you know the stories about him. This is the evidence of the decline of a nation. This is evidence of the decline of a civilization. So this was matters related to America. Many other Western powers are similar to the US in these aspects. Now, I don't want to name them, but some other Western powers are like America in this field. In the media, they teach destruction. They teach people how to riot and how to make Molotov cocktails and hand grenades. What is the reason for this? This issue is not that they are committing a crime by doing this. Yes, it is a crime, but it is also depravity. This is depraved behavior.
That you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
A recent Afghanistan welfare monitoring survey by the World Bank is sounding the alarm bell about the devastating living conditions of Afghan people. People are struggling to put food on the table while lacking access to many other simple necessities. Almost half the population has reported a constant decrease in monthly earnings.
We are facing many difficulties, especially in recent weeks. We slid into a bad recession. I work from dawn to dark, selling potatoes and onions. But so far, I haven't even made a penny to buy some loaves of bread for my 6 children. Our house is cold and I have not bought fuel. I am concerned about the health of my children.
The survey has also found a rise in unemployment rates across the country. More and more Afghans are finding it difficult to land a job. The situation is only expected to get worse during the coming winter months. World Bank officials have called on Taliban rulers to take action on improving the living conditions of Afghan people. The Taliban says it does have plans, but needs access to the Afghan assets frozen by Washington in order to make them work.
With regards to addressing people's livelihoods and poverty, I confess there have been problems. And the major reason for the economic crisis and deprivation of Afghans is that their assets are crucially frozen. Furthermore, Afghanistan is practically sanctioned. Those who were defeated in Afghanistan use sanctions as tools for advancing their foreign diplomacy. But we are trying to neutralize the effects of sanctions and move Afghanistan to gradually become stable and self-sufficient.
The U.S. withdrew its forces from Afghanistan in 2021, but that has not stopped American politicians from asserting pressure on Afghan people. The war-torn country has not yet got the chance to repair the damage caused by more than 2 decades of Western aggression. As the winter comes closer, more and more Afghans are struggling. People here believe urgent support from the international community can be a lifeline for millions. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The EU is currently paying more for gas than any other region in the world. The European Commission had proposed to cap natural gas prices at €275 per megawatt hour. The idea was totally rubbished by the bloc's energy ministers at a meeting on Thursday.
A ceiling between €150 and €200 is a realistic ceiling, and this could help us reduce gas prices and therefore reduce electricity prices.
But any sort of a cap could result in gas suppliers moving their tankers to other parts of the world where there is no cap, like Asia.
If we really see that this mechanism is designed in the way that that we will lose LNG cargoes to other international markets, then we can suspend it.
As things stand in the EU, there is no guarantee of a manageable gas price or even a gas supply for 2023.
If we cannot keep our economy running, we will not be able to support Ukraine, and we must do everything to avoid such scenario.
Those representing small to medium-sized businesses are looking for EU support amid high inflation and growing interest rates.
If we not want to fight unemployment and youth unemployment, we need to take care about the growth and competitiveness of European SMEs.
A debate in the European Parliament this week on promoting stability in the Middle East heard that the initiative would help ensure energy security.